I am simply telling you to proceed with caution. As often as magic is the solution to a problem, it can also be the cause.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 224 for the week of August 29th, 2018. I am Eye of Newt, David Tickle, and I'm here with Spencer's Gift Wiccan, Sarah D. Bunting.
Clean up on aisle, blessed be.
Suck you, bitch, Tara Ariano.
Oh, I'll bind you.
And Vegetable Pie, Eve Beatty.
You know I don't like onions.
Welcome to a very spooky Extra Hot Grate. As you can tell from the intro, Dave is not all here because he said it was August 29th. It is not.
Did I?
It's October.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Look,
Dave's not doing well. I had a cold last week and then I gave it to him. So he's afflicted.
Sarah's generating lots of spooky phlegm.
Sarah's got a sinus thing.
It's
I barely
from
slept last night.
Inside the skull.
Yes. We are here.
Fair warning to our listeners, though, just like sniffles and probably sneezes and coughs will happen. So if that stuff does bugs you, I don't know, maybe bow out now because everybody's sick.
Possible jingles from Eve's dog because Eve is here. All Hallows Eve. Hi, Eve, baby.
Hey, guys.
Welcome back. So for the Halloween season, holiday, what have you, occasion, we are doing a doubleheader of witch reboots, specifically the CW's Charmed and Netflix's Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. And we have watched, Dave and I have watched every episode of both of these. We just like, because we were sick on the weekend, we just laid in bed and watched 10 episodes of Sabrina back to back with like... no breaks, basically. And we watched the first three Charmed, and I'm going to throw it to Eve in a second, but I would say my big picture thoughts are I kind of like Charmed better, and I was not expecting to. I never watched the original Charmed, and maybe I was like prejudiced in its favor because Holly Marie Combs and Alyssa Milano of the original have been such bitches about the remake. Like... really not appropriate. This is not how you get a cameo on the show, ladies. Talk to Mackenzie Phillips about the One Day at a Time reboot. But I feel like it has a lighter tone. I know it's for kids, but like the Sabrina on Netflix is more to the Riverdale end of it, where it's like dark and sinister and satanic and stuff. And I find that kind of tedious. Eve, why don't you start us off with what your compare and contrasts are in these two shows?
Well, I was not sick this weekend, but I still lay in bed and watched all of both of those shows. I did not see the most recent episode of Charmed, but I saw the last two, and I watched all of Sabrina back to back, pretty much without breaks, too. So we're in the same boat, I guess, without some of the mucus. And I feel like, even though, you know, we're talking about like the sort of, you know, the idea is, oh, we've got these sort of reboots of these two beloved 90s classics. So that's how we'd square it off if we were writing about it, you know, like in a sort of like head-to-head thing. I think that another way to sort of look at it is that right now, it's like a variety box of tampons. Depending on what your flow is for your distrust and fear of the patriarchy, we've got a witch show for you. For your light days... you know, your slender regular with the plastic applicator, you've got Charmed. If you're feeling a little more grown up, you want just like maybe like a regular applicatorless OB, you've got Sabrina. And if it's like really bad and really serious, just it's American Horror Story Apocalypse, yeah. And it's the Diva Cup. And, you know, because that's, I mean, and it's... of course, you know, it's October, so we're going to see a lot of like sort of a Halloween-y scary things. This is when you roll out the supernatural stuff. But it's also, I think, to me, so indicative of our general feelings about everything that we're seeing these three sort of women with sort of like the last job that we get to have, which is being witches, and guys trying to take it away from us, too.
I have something about that whole analogy to say.
Excuse me, I have to get this. It's my doctor. Hello,
Oh, so I have tested positive for diarrhea then. I have to leave the room? Oh, no, I'm in a conversation that I love and I know what I'm going to say next in. Oh, well, you're the doctor. Bye.
Don't be afraid of menstruation, Dave. It's a normal female thing.
I've just been waiting to use that clip for months. Months.
No, it's beautiful. I was really afraid when it started that you thought that menstruation and diarrhea were the same thing. So I was pretty relieved at how it played out. I was like, what is this, Congress?
I'm Coach Steve.
All right, Sarah, you did watch the old Charmed. What were your reactions to these remakes?
Really, first of all, object to having to follow the Diva Cup analogy with my own sad comments. I watched the old Charmed like maybe twice.
I thought you watched it on TNT. Maybe I'm thinking of your sister-in-law.
Yes, you are.
Okay.
Bless her heart. Yes, Samantha has watched the entire series run and feels ways. Uh-huh. About Kaylee Cuoco, few of them good. But I did watch it occasionally hanging out with her. And it, I mean, I think that the new Charmed, even though it has like 2 stars on IMDb or something like that, it's fine. Like you can't go in expecting it to be The Wire, which is why I don't understand why Holly Marie Combs and Alyssa Milano are being bitches about it. Like, it's not like this is, you know, top 10 all time great TV. Like, it's a whatever. It was a WB show with shitty special effects starring people who washed out of other crappy shows. Like, get over yourselves. But I liked this fine. Like, you know that nobody's going to die. The whole white lighter, you can't tell anyone. Like, it's, you know, it's annoying, but like, you don't have to pay full attention to it. Mm-hmm. Everyone is very attractive. Some of these sorority sisters are 32 years old, but that's okay. Returning students, not a big deal. It's not good, but it's not hatefully bad either. And it's not boring. It's just like candy, which is the season. So that's fine. The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. I never watched the original. I watched an episode and a half of this one, and I don't dislike it, but it mostly made me like watching the two of them, and especially Sabrina second, and that whole like Riverdale Addams Family feel to it that it had. Like, there are some really like beautiful moments in it, like in the premiere when, or I guess maybe it's the second episode, whatever episode it is, when Sabrina is telling Harvey, whatever with these names, that, you know, that she, what's happening with her, and then she has to like glamour him basically into forgetting about it. Mm-hmm. And she has that, she's upset and she's like, you know, we got lost, but now we're okay. Like, her line delivery of that is really amazing. Like, I think that she's perfect for this because she can be light and funny, but also serious. So that's great, but like, just witch stuff is not my jam overall. And this felt like it was either too dark or not dark enough.
Yeah.
But yeah.
The combined effect was to make me miss Witches of East End, which I was trying to explain to someone last night as a thing that actually existed.
Yep.
Adam Grossworth, hear my cry. But it did. She was like, Julia Ormond? That wasn't a thing. I'm like, I swear to God it was a thing with Mrs. Channing Tatum, or the ex Mrs. Channing Tatum. And she was like, you're lying. I was like, look on your phone. I swear to God this occurred. And I watched all of it. And I kind of missed it because I'm always looking for that show that is going to capture the magic of Practical Magic and make it into a show. And I think what perhaps has to happen is that Big Little Lies becomes like Big Little Wiccans or something. And they bring Sandy Bullock onto it, and Goran Visnjak and everyone else from that movie, and just like reboot it as Practical Magic, the HBO show. And then I can die happy.
I found that Sabrina felt like it wanted to bare its teeth, but never did.
Yeah.
That all the, there's a lot of elements there that seem to indicate that they wanted to go whole hog or were toying with it. You know, like, it is very satanic. There's lots of that going on, and they don't really shy away from showing demons and stuff like that. But then, like, at the end of each episode, you're like, that was like almost there, but then they pulled back at some points. And I mean, it felt like it could either go and either be scarier or funnier.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I just think, you know, it's the problem that we have all talked about again and again with Netflix shows. I think Sabrina could have been a delicious 6 episodes, you know, but instead it felt extremely dilute to me that they were trying to stretch it to 10. And with that, you know, like that dumb dream episode, which I don't know, yes. Sarah, you might have actually liked it because it was basically just like a Buffy mimeograph. That sounds like a dig on you, Sarah. I didn't mean it like that. but, you know, like that, it was like a standalone sort of like whatever, or like, you know, oh, guess what? You know, our gay uncle in the Long Johns is possessed. You know, it's real sad that no one ever accepted that he was gay and all that. Like, I really appreciate the sort of the casual wokeness that both Charmed and Sabrina sort of expressed with, you know, the Me Too stuff and the casual lesbianism that so many WB shows have lately. You know, this and, you know, I'm thinking about obviously Black Lightning too, how it's like, oh, the oldest daughter, she's just a lesbian, it's no big. I like all that. I'm glad that it's happening, and it's a little less heavy-handed than, you know, some of the wokeness we see on, like, I don't know, you know, my secret favorite, Madam Secretary, or something like that. But you guys know I love that show. But I, you know, and so I appreciate all that, but at the same time, it's like, you could have given me the message that it's okay to be a transgender or non-binary or gay without giving me a whole episode about a guy in his Long Johns who's doing a Reagan impression. Not the president, for people who haven't watched the episode.
Yeah. I appreciate that too. I think Dave nailed it where it's like it needed to be scarier or funnier. Because there are definitely moments where it feels like it's edging toward being more Buffy-like in its wit, but it also has that kind of like it has that Riverdale aspect that Riverdale itself borrowed from Twin Peaks, where it's like it could be now or it could be 1961. Like everyone's styled in these mod cloth clothes that could be from like any time.
And
you don't
cars.
See a cell phone until like episode 5.
And speaking of dates, if you have title cards with dates and days of the week, you can't say present year because it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Because guess what? The day of the week changes year to year, Sabrina.
Yeah.
But one of my notes referred to VC Andrews with the timeline that I was like, are they trying to my sweet Audrina how old these characters are? And look, I love Miranda Otto and she's having a ball, but I was just kind of like, like even the first episode felt like this didn't need to be a full hour.
Yeah.
We get it. You could have done all of this in 42 minutes. Not that I'm complaining about the camera lingering on the production design. I was pretty proud to note that I had some of the same mid-century glass chicken ware that the Spellmans did, but this is, you know, this is not enough. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
I feel like only Michelle Gomez, who plays Miss Wardwell, is like getting to has the correct level of camp for me. For Sabrina. And maybe now that, like, no spoilers for anyone who hasn't gotten to the end yet, but now that they've sort of done a reset and things are going to be different in season 2, it will be more compelling. But the other problem for me is Kiernan Shipka, not because I think she's a bad actor, but she just looks so sad all the time. And maybe it's because we saw her grow up from like a very small child on Mad Men, but like she still looks like a baby to me. Like she's still got that huge head on tiny shoulders. Like it's creepy to me to see her like kiss boys and stuff. Maybe that's my own issue, but like she doesn't seem like the right kind of casting. I'm going to take the squeaky possum away from Gordon. One moment, please.
I was like, which dog was
the weevil?
I mean, I don't think I'm going to watch either of them again, but if I were going to watch one again, it would be the Charmed reboot, just because I don't think it's not trying so hard and it's not asking so much of me.
It's not trying so hard. It telegraphs absolutely everything that's going to happen in that show. Like, I don't know whether that is a good thing or a bad thing. It might be a good thing if you're just looking for a casual show to have on in the background because it's not very challenging. But wow, every plot point in that show, they really like sent the messenger ahead of time to let you know what was going to happen. I found that very, like, kind of took the energy out of it for me.
Yeah, I guess. But I think that was part of the charm, as it were, of the mm-hmm. original, is that you felt fairly safe in that people were not going to die. And then, like, people always would die because there were always, like, problems between Shannon Doherty and Aaron Spelling and whoever else. And then that made it more intense, I guess, for regular viewers of the show. But I don't know. Like, the old one was like, it wasn't trying to be anything. It wasn't, I didn't think, but apparently Mesdames Combs and Milano were like, oh no, it was art. Like, well, it wasn't, but that's okay. So that's where I'm at with it. Like, Sabrina is, you know, it, like, it's a good show, I guess, but it's kind of like where I was at with Luke Cage. In fact, that I'm like, I think that I understand what this show thinks it is, and it's going to take too long to get there. So I'm
right. Yeah. I think that Sabrina would benefit from the same thing I argue for Luke Cage and et al., which is, if you have a comic book adaptation, why not take the formula where you have three episodes and that's an arc, then you have another three episodes and that's an arc, you know, like they usually do in comics where they have mini arcs and then there's, you know, character progression across, you know, six or seven mini arcs and that's the run, you know, until somebody else takes over and they reset everything. You can get away with that. Like, if Sabrina was, I don't want to put a spoiler in here, but, you know, it starts with her going for her dark baptismal, which is, you know, like, now she's a witch woman, you know, and that could have been like, that origin story could have been three episodes. And then there's stuff at the end of the season where, you know, there's a showdown that could have been three episodes, you know, the build up and then everything to do with that. And if they structured it that way, I think it would have moved along a little bit better. And, like, I think that's a solution for pretty much every comic book show Netflix had.
Well, and similarly, Charmed has the same problem that all the CW superhero shows have. For me, it's not a problem for them because they're hugely successful, but that it's that they're for children. And that's why they have to, like, lead you by the hand for the whole entire time. Meh.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I would prefer to see both of these on the Sherlock model, which is like, once a year you get three, like, hour and 45 minute movies that kind of go together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's plenty. That's all you need.
This is why you guys should be watching American Horror Story Apocalypse if you aren't already, because so many of the complaints that I feel like you have about these two shows are being handled by, you know, this season of American Horror Story.
100%.
Plus you have all the witches, you know?
For sure.
There's American Horror Story, it owns the reset and it goes as dark as you want. Are you going to be in the mood for that show every day? You're absolutely not, because you don't feel like looking at intestines all the time. And that's when Charmed or Sabrina is going to fill sort of that same gap. But, like, you know, it's great. It's great to have options.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about both of these shows that we're talking about today is that they, like, try to have rules, but then the rules can be thrown out anytime. And American Horror Story is just like, what the fuck ever? Like, they've never cared about that. And this season, especially, like, there was a moment in Sabrina where someone gets brought back to life and there's all this, like, oh, this is a huge deal. It's a big spell. You can't blah, blah. I turned to Dave and was like, 15 people an episode get brought back from the dead on American Horror Story. Like, it, you know, it's more fun if magic is magic and you don't have to be like, well, you have to whatever, whatever. Yeah. However, they try to constrain it for, you know, story reasons.
Got to play magic tax and you can't afford it.
Yeah.
Sure.
And now, a reminder to vote, sponsored by Carrie. Buncey here. My father once told me, when in doubt, be there. I don't remember the context of that koan, but it's guided me for many years, and come Election Day 2018, I hope it will guide you too, gentle listener. I'll never forget accompanying my parents to the polls in our hometown years ago, the first time I'd voted after college and actually gone into the booth instead of filling out an absentee ballot in a dorm room. The poll worker opened the books to the late B's to reveal my parents' neat, official signatures marching down entire pages going back to the middle of Nixon's first term, every single year, even in the years when it seemed like there was, quote, nothing important on the ballot. The ballot is important. You are important. Gun control, reproductive rights, a humane and affordable healthcare option for every citizen. Criminal justice reform that prioritizes actual justice, not the margins of for-profit prisons. You can't fix all of these issues by yourself in one day, but your only option to influence any of them is to vote, even if you don't love the choices available. You don't have to love them. You just have to make them. Because here's the other thing about that long, impressive list of Bunting Hancocks. My father has many fine qualities, including the dispensation of profundities, but his Reagan fandom back in the day is, alas, not on that list. He voted for Dutch and for his down-ticket minions loyally every year. And my mother, every year, handed him whichever one of us was a baby, marched into the booth, and canceled his GOP shit out with a straight Democratic ticket. Every year. Conservatives don't have to be told their votes count. They're coming to cancel you out. Oh, I doubt that. Well, like the man said, when in doubt, be there. Vote November 6th. Unless you supported Brett Kavanaugh, in which case, stick your head in a beehive and repent instead. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I hope Carrie approves this message.
It's time to go around the dial. First up, Tara Ariano.
Well, keeping with the spooky theme, I'm going to talk about The Haunting of Hill House. Someone tweeted that they were hoping we were going to talk about it. And since it was already on my Netflix queue, I thought, well, I'll just watch it. And then I went to try and find who had tweeted that at me, and I couldn't find it on any of the accounts that I control. So maybe it was a ghost. Sorry, user, whoever tweeted that at me, that I couldn't find you. So this is based on the Shirley Jackson novel. It's a 10 episode Netflix series. As we were saying about Sabrina, that is too many. And it's what you think. This family moves into a house. They deny for a while that it's haunted. Eventually, events overtake them and they realize it totally is very haunted, and stuff happens. So here's the problem with the season. The first episode sort of establishes all of the characters who are, you know, mostly it goes back and forth from the summer that they're living in the house to the present day when the kids are all adults and there are five of them. And it revolves around the events that lead up to the youngest girl's, suicide in the house. She returns to it and kills herself. So then the following four episodes are just a retelling of like what the characters were doing up to that time that we didn't see them on screen in the first episode. So it's really repetitive and elliptical. And then the denouement in the last five episodes, like it feels like the show is gets less scary as it goes on. And by the end, the finale is like the least scary episode of all of them. And it sort of reframes this question of like, what's up with this haunted house to, isn't it great that there's a haunted house where if you die in it, you can live forever, which is like completely negates everything that came before. Makes no sense. There's like multiple ghosts and multiple guises. I have to say Elizabeth Reaser, although she's not my favorite, plays one of the grown-up sisters, and maybe it's just because she's playing like kind of a brittle bitch, but she's good in this. Sorry, Sarah. The other weirdness for me as a child of two is like five kids really seems like a complicated web of relationships to navigate, and like how people do it, I don't know. Like taking sides against each other with five kids is too many. Two is the correct number. Thank you for coming to my TED talk. Carla Gugino plays the mother. She looks amazing. Some of the scares are good, but like I watched all 10 of these episodes thinking like eventually there was going to be an origin story that sort of covered all of like the original ghosts that were in the house when the cranes move in. And we see some of them and we hear like bits of it, but we never get a holistic look at it. And then at the end, I was like, oh, fuck, it's because season two is going to be the story of the original Hills. Like that, of course, that's the reason. And like, no, I'm out. I read our friend Catherine Van Arendonk is not a fan of scary things. And she wrote about this for Vulture, rating each episode by scares for the chicken. So if that's you and you're curious about this show, then check that out because she is probably more accurate with me. I'm not a huge horror fan. And even for me, I was like, this is really tame and like really, really slow and boring. And there were times when like I was looking at my phone and realized like I missed a ghost that was just hanging out in the background of a scene, not doing anything. Like are people excited about it? I don't get the impression that they are. Eve, did you watch this?
I watched the first three episodes and I'm like, is this everything just going to be like, ooh, it's a scary big mouth?
Yeah.
That's what will happen when you're looking at your phone, Tara. Something else had a really big mouth.
Yeah.
That's all. And a big mouth isn't scary to me. I used to be an orthodontic assistant. I've seen some big ass mouths. And like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I felt like they were trying so hard to like make it like art, like everything's mm-hmm. got a filter, right? Like everything's like it's sepia at the old lady's house with the horn honk guy, and it's blue at this other place, and we're mm-hmm. house flippers and we're sleeping in the furniture that was left behind. I had these mm-hmm. people not watch Flipper Flop. Mm-mm. Don't sleep in that furniture. Those are beds that were left behind.
I know, gross.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it just ends up being like another show about sad white people and their white people problems less yep. than a horror show. So meh, like if you want to see sad white people around corpses, like just watch 6 Feet Under instead.
In the end, it was bad ROI.
Yep. So the other thing was that then it just made me notice, like it made me start nitpicking stuff, like why does Steven's hair part change sides from when he was a kid to an adult? And why does Luke have glasses when he's a kid? And then when he's an adult living on the street, we're supposed to think he can keep up with contacts when he's like has no access to reliable sanitation. I don't buy it. Haunting of Hill House. For my plug, I don't have anything big to plug this week, so I'm going to tell you a little story about Runaway Heart. I was on Google a couple of weeks ago, Googling for the poster of a movie called Runaway Heart, starring Michael Tucker and Jill Eikenberry, the married stars of L.A. Law, to make a snarky Instagram post about how they were the Jay-Z and Beyonce of the 80s. And I stand by that. But when I was Googling for this poster, I found another cover of a book called Runaway Heart, which was, as far as I could tell, a Harlequin novel from 1986 set at Disney World. Prominent in the middle of the cover is this couple in front of the spaceship Earth at Epcot. And I was like, I have to acquire this. Obviously, it's out of print. It's a Harlequin from 1986. But there were several used copies on Amazon. And I say they were because there aren't any more, because as soon as I bought it, I tweeted about it. And apparently all of the like five other copies that were available 2 weeks ago are gone. Sorry that there's only a $68 one left. So I started live tweeting it last week because it's preposterous and silly. And if you want to follow my adventures through Runaway Heart, which are continuing, you can go to the show notes at previously.tv for the first tweet in the thread. Yes, I did. Sorry, everybody.
One question about Runaway Heart.
Yeah.
Do they refer to vaginas as the happiest place on earth?
No, they do refer to the heroine's dark triangle visible through her nightgown. So,
how about Mr. Toad's wild ride?
Tomorrowland.
Eve.
Well, you know, it's to sort of continue the Netflix theme, which I didn't intend to. In fact, I thought when I actually watched Iron Fist season two. Gosh, I hope I get invited back on this podcast so I can bring it up and around the dial. Because you guys, even though Iron Fist season two has been canceled, as you know, was discussed on the show last week, that's too bad because the second season is actually good.
What?
I know. I freaking know, you guys.
Explain how.
I know, it's super weird. But the thing is, if I tell you, it's going to ruin the surprise. So I'm trying to figure out a way to explain it that doesn't like completely blow. For one thing, Danny's not that important this season. And you spend a lot more time with Colleen Wing, who is the woman who ran the dojo and for whatever reason is involved with Danny, even though he apparently doesn't have money anymore. So, which, in my opinion, negates any reason to be with Danny. And the police officer who I feel was so poorly used on the second season of Luke Cage, which did have its good moments, but I agreed with the assessment that was, you know, presented last week that it was a lot of promise that was sort of squandered. Mm-hmm. So we see Misty and Colleen doing most of the work, and we realize that the Iron Fist isn't Danny. It's more of a thing that more than one person can have, and maybe Danny doesn't have to have it. And there's not that much about guys in it. All the strength really in the show comes from Colleen, Misty, and the sister. Shit, what's her name? The sister of the the people who are running the Rand Corporation. Right. So it's a lot of girls doing cool stuff. Misty's beating people up. So's Colleen, and the sister wears some amazing outfits. So there's no reason to invest more time in these canceled shows, really, because it's not like you're going to need to watch it to like know anything. But if you have some time, or you're sick, or like me, you had a terrible sprained ankle and you were sort of stuck, unable to get up and down the stairs in your apartment without the assistance of your husband, turn it on. And I promise you, you're going to be extremely pleasantly surprised. For real.
I don't believe you.
I know. Seriously.
Fist is midichlorians.
If I could somehow get a forcening for the entire season, I would not do that to you, Dave. I still wouldn't do it to you, but I'd seriously consider it. I know. But, if you really are looking for something to watch and you're already like, oh, Luke Cage season two was, Jessica Jones season two was, I don't know, guys. I think that Iron Fist season two might be up your alley. So I'm just going to recommend that. And for my plug, I have a new newsletter I'm editing. It's called Inside Media. You can subscribe to it at inside.com/media. It's a roundup of the news of the news and media industry every day, 5 days a week. And I try to have a good time with it and show a lot of stuff. And also, if you're thinking about a career in media, I always try to list a couple of jobs that I think are really interesting. So in my opinion, of my own creation, it's a good way to sort of get an idea of what's going on in the news industry every day, which, in my opinion, given my profession, is more important than ever before, given how it's under siege from so many sides. So if you would like, please subscribe to Inside Media at inside.com/media. And I don't get any money if you subscribe, but it would make me feel good to know that you are reading.
We will link it in the show notes.
Thank you.
Sarah.
So Eve and the aforementioned husband were on this very show to talk about Counterpart when it premiered earlier this year, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
Which
I think officially it had a sneak preview of the pilot in December.
That's right. And I sort of watched as much as I could for the record and then put it on my list of shows to get back to. 10 months later, here we are. I just polished off the first season because they sent us some screeners for season two. And I was like, I should get on this, or at least go back and watch a couple more episodes and see if I really want to keep going. And boy, do I. Counterpart, in case you've forgotten, is the J.K. Simmons starrer. There's like a pass-through opened up between two worlds in 1987, I think. And like agents are crossing between them. Confusion reigns. And it's a really cool sci-fi concept with a fantastic cast. Obviously, J.K. Simmons is great. Olivia Williams is great. Goes without saying. but I would just like to take a moment and acknowledge the triumph of mediocrity performance by Harry Lloyd as Peter.
Yes.
That character is so despicable. Like when he's sort of slubbing around his house in his dress shirt with that like nubby bathrobe over it. And I'm just like, okay, shitty Mr. Rogers, like deal with yourself. Like everything is basically his fault. And he always looks moist and like he's about to gag, and it's great. Like Lloyd never cheats his middling trifling management-ness, and it's, I just wanted to acknowledge that that character is crucial to one's investment in the plot, at least versus the various characters and their others. And but it's like, you know, it's not a flattering performance, but it's excellent. And the show is definitely worth sticking with. I'm glad I finished up the first season. I'm excited to move on to the second season. I am actually not sure where, besides On Demand, one might watch Counterpart. It's probably on Amazon.
They'll probably put it out on iTunes and Amazon closer to the season two premiere, I would guess.
Yeah.
But if you have Stars, it's on your app.
Yes. And season two premieres December 9th of this year. So now is a great time to get caught up. It's just really solid. It's a really solidly built show. And there's not too many episodes. Like there are 10 in the first season. I feel like you do kind of need them all. Maybe you could do it in 8, but I also always have to watch the previouslys, even if I just finished watching the prior episode that I'm like, all right, so Alpha, Prime, here's who's where. That's the hairstyle. Anyway, it's exciting. For my plug, it's an all briefs, briefs week of the blotter this week, thanks to technical difficulties on the main podcast side. Subjects include the Clinton impeachment, Rachel Maddow's new podcast, Bagman, which is about Spiro Agnew, history's Watergate special event. It's a very politics-y crime week on the blotter, and you can subscribe to that wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
Hey, George.
Hi.
Hi.
What's the matter?
My mother caught me.
Caught you? Doing what?
You know. I was alone.
You mean?
She caught you? Where?
I stopped by the house to drop the car off, and I went inside for a few minutes. Nobody was there. They're supposed to be working. My mother had a Glamour magazine. I started looking for it.
Glamour?
So one thing led to another.
So what did she do?
First, she screams, George, what are you doing? My God! And it looked like she was going to faint. She started clutching the wall, trying to hang on to it. Man. I didn't know whether to try and keep her from falling or zip up.
What did you do?
I zipped up.
So she fell?
Yeah. Well, I couldn't run over there the way I was.
No, I guess you couldn't.
I wouldn't think so.
So she fell, and then she starts screaming, my back, my back! So I picked her up. I took her to the hospital.
Oh, how is she?
She's in traction.
Sorry.
It's not funny, Elaine.
I know. I'm fine.
Her back went out. She's got to be there for a couple of days. All she said on the way over in the car was, why, George, why? I said, because it's there.
Glamour?
All right, I'll tell you this, though. I am never doing that again.
What? You mean in your mother's house or all together?
All together.
No, like, give me a break.
Right.
Come on. You don't think I can?
No chance.
You think you could?
Well, I know I could hold out longer than you.
Care to make it interesting?
Sure, how much?
$100?
You're on.
Wait a second. Count me in on this.
You?
Yeah.
You'll be out before we get the check.
I want to be in on this, too.
No.
Why?
It's a different thing. Because you're a woman.
So what?
It's
easier for a woman not to do it than a man. We have to do it. It's part of our lifestyle. It's like shaving.
Oh, that is such a baloney. I shave my legs.
Not every day.
This is Caroline. I'm submitting season 4, episode 11 of Seinfeld to the canon. To be honest, it never occurred to me to present the contest because I was positive it must have been one of the first entry in the extra hot great canon, if not the first. But here we are, so I'll make it short, as we all know the plot of this one. It's the famous episode about masturbation, a word never mentioned in the dialogue. There are so many little moments that make this episode great. The fact that Jerry can get past the idea that George felt, shall we say, inspired, while reading a Glamour magazine. The great cut to the characters in their beds, the characters having lost a bed being sound asleep, while the others are tossing and turning. The fact that each of them is challenged in a very specific way. Of course, for Elaine, it was John Kennedy. For a New York woman in the 90s, it had to be. The great shadow puppet lesbian show for George, a gag that will reap even more dividends later on in the season when George's heterosexuality is questioned. But on top of that, it is a typical episode of Seinfeld. It coined the expression master of my domain, and all the threads collide in the end. This was made 25 years ago on NBC, and I can't even imagine how difficult it must have been to get this accepted. The way it dovetails on its subject is really beautifully done. Nowadays, creators can be as straightforward as they want, and I think for the most part it is a good thing. But much like in suspense films, the less we see, the more we're scared. Here, the less direct they are, the funnier they get. Thank you for your consideration.
All right, who wants to go first?
Well, Eve picked it from our list of user submissions, so why doesn't Eve start?
Sounds good.
All right. Well, you know, I like our presenter I hate to be like that dumb American, but what a beautiful accent. Can you just like come over and read something to me, please, like every day? Like our presenter, I was really surprised that it wasn't in the canon and like double checked, like you guys wouldn't know.
Same.
But I still went and double checked to make sure it wasn't anywhere, like Googled like a bunch of different ways. And when I was Googling, I came across there are so many like oral histories of this one specific episode, like so much sort of like online ink has been spilled over this one show. Between, you know, between when it aired in 92 and now, that it's like, I am like hard pressed to think of another like sort of non-series finale that has generated this much sort of discussion. So I too am surprised that it isn't in the canon. And so the big question for me is, how does this hold up for people who aren't our age? Like, is it possible for somebody who's not in, I think I'm the oldest of everyone here, but is it possible, but we're all in roughly the same cohort, someone who's like in their 30s, did they get like what John Kennedy meant to women around our age, especially urban women? I mean, like, do these people even know about George Magazine, like youngsters, you know, like, and how else does it hold up in a way that makes it sort of canon worthy? Are we still comfortable with the whole idea of voyeurism of, you know, these men and Elaine sitting in the window watching their neighbor walk around naked? So that's sort of what I am struggling with when I think about what is, I mean, there's no question that this is an iconic episode that's like important in like TV history. And I'm sure when you take some sort of class, you have to watch it. But given that we are all woke people here, is everything about this episode, you know, congruent enough with our beliefs that we're comfortable elevating it to canon? That's sort of the question I have today.
Sarah.
This, first of all, Carolyn, welcome back to the presenter's chair. I love the uniqueness of this presentation, that it was just like the opening scene and then very quick, like, you know, it's usually like, here's an intro clip. Here's another reason that this should be in the canon clip. So that was kind of fun. It was definitely fun to revisit this episode. Kramer is like Kramer proportions are sometimes a problem for me when it comes to revisiting Seinfeld. And, you know, Michael Richards' proportions, always a problem every day. But the wapping down of the money on the counter and the announcement, I'm out.
Yep.
I mean, like, this is how every single dollar bet is settled in my house. Mm-hmm. Still, bunk, I'm out. And this is really like peak Seinfeld. This is before Kramer started bursting into the apartment, and then there was like 3.5 minutes of audience Clapture. Noise. Yeah. This is before, like, this is with Elaine's old hair, and like right after she changes her style is sort of when it goes a little bit downhill, with some exceptions. I mean, I did, you know, my canon thing is like, did I want to just roll over into the next episode? And I did. But Eve's point is well taken. Like, you know, I feel like we all lived with this show 20, 25 years ago. And like, we knew every episode, and when it was, you know, coming up to the finale, we were all reading like the think pieces and the rankings and Entertainment Weekly and all that stuff. And I don't know if that's like, there's a whole new generation watching Friends, but I don't know if that's true of Seinfeld. And there are parts of this that are a little bit Catskillsy and boggy, but I still think it's a canonical episode. And I was shocked to see not just that this wasn't in the canon, like I did check, but we haven't put a Seinfeld in since Mark One.
Yeah.
So that's, and only two of them. But this is one of the, I think, first two or three that anyone thinks of. And yeah, there are some little problems with it, but I think the economical presentation is pretty much right on. So it's probably a yes for me, but I'm interested to hear what the rest of the panel thinks. Tara.
Well, I agree with you. And in terms of like, can we still like it knowing what we know now in terms of like sexual agency and so on? Like, you, I feel like you kind of have to watch this like you would, like we, when we watch, you know, Barney Miller. Like, this episode is 26 years old. Like, it's, you know, this, the show,
but Tara,
went off the
it doesn't
air.
Feel that way. We're forever young.
I know, but I mean, I want, like, yeah. Retelling, like I mm-hmm. watch Friends every day. Yeah. and those episodes are around, you know, the early yeah. ones are that old too. So, yeah. You know, it's just funny. Like, Caroline is right. It's the euphemisms for masturbation are actually clever. Like, it was smart how they got around it. In terms of that alone, I feel like it's an important TV document of its time. And the way the contrast is, she notes with like cutting to the various contest participants, happily sleeping after they've dropped out versus Jerry and George like barking at each other in the apartment mid-contest, like, I get my coffee on the outside. I'd love that. Jerry threatening to go across the street and tell the woman to close her blinds. You know, it's very funny. Sarah's right about Kramer, that a little of him goes a long way, and he is not in this episode very much, which I think is a positive. And also, it comes in the middle of what is for sure the show's strongest and most innovative season, which was the one where they're making the pilot. And so even in the middle of all of that, without having really much to do with the TV stuff, except for a reference when George is trying to watch the lesbian shadow puppets, and I had forgotten I forgot that the callback to it was with the male nurse and male patient was not in this episode, so thank you for that reminder too. That's also a funny note. This I don't know how else to say it, this is like a classic moment of television, so for me, for sure, this is canon worthy. Dave.
So I think the whole like naked woman across the street thing, I got the impression that was basically the same deal as the Friends naked dude guy. What's a fat naked man?
Ugly,
whatever
naked
they call him.
Guy.
Yeah.
Like, I got the impression that they had set up basically their own little nudist beach in front of their window, and they were just walking around and they didn't give a shit. And it's New York. So when you walk around your window naked, so be it. You're going to have people leering. I didn't really feel like that aged poorly at all. Like, I feel like that is kind of shit that still happens. If it's okay in France, it's okay here. I feel like it's on the same level. The thing that sold me about this episode beyond just the obvious, you know, historical and canonical elements of it is that when you listen to this, the laugh track, there's a few people that you can tell that they just like rose up because they were having like a genuine what the fuck time as they were in the studio audience. Like, there's this one woman who's just like hysterically laughing and sort of like in disbelief of what she's, you know, viewing, that like, oh my God, they're actually doing this and they're getting away with it. And that sort of like just sort of resells me on just how special this episode is and, you know, kind of how daring, but also smart they were about how they got away with everything. So everything Caroline said is true. And I didn't have really a problem with the lady across the street bit. I think it helps that Elaine is in on it too. You know, it sort of softens the edge of that too, if you're worried about the kind of the voyeuristic elements of that. So big thumbs up for me there too. So shall we put the vote?
Dave.
Yeah.
Dave, to your point on the laugh track, in one of the little articles that I read, you know, preparing for this, they didn't sweeten the laugh track at all. And so it's technically not a quote unquote laugh track, which, you know, we would expect it to be. That is all audience reaction. They said that they didn't do a single bit of tuning. So, I mean, what you sensed was accurate, that was all a genuine reaction.
Oh, that's great to hear. Yeah, I totally believe that too. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So, Eve, what say you?
I tried to like throw some suspense in there, but you guys weren't having it. So, I mean, obviously, like, no duh. It's absolutely like a yes. How can it not be? I tried hard though, you guys.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh, John. It's a yes for me as well.
Tara Ariano.
Look, if you walk around naked and where I can see, I'm going to watch. If you fight outside of my house, I'm 100% going to watch. Yes, of course. This is great. Thank you for the presentation. And it's a yes for me.
And for me, too. That means Seinfeld Season 4, Episode 11, The Contest. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
Time for winner and loser of the week. Tara has the winner.
I just want just a PS to that. Eve is making me feel bad about the number of stories I have about hiding in a window and watching strangers fight, which is like my favorite thing. We have some great stories. Anyway, that is neither here nor there. Winner of the week, Sofia Vergara. It was announced last week that she is, at $41.5 million a year, TV's highest paid actor, that's right, of either sex. There is not a man who is an actor on TV who's paid more than her. Is she the linchpin of Modern Family? I haven't watched it in at least since season two, so I have no idea. But whatever, get that cheddar, Sofia Vergara. It's the final season. Hoard it up. Good for you.
And loser of the week?
Well, with an honorable mention to Netflix for canceling American Vandal, obviously has to be Megyn Kelly, who is out at NBC after a panel of white people defended blackface on her segment and after the shitty apology that followed that. And she was dropped by CAA and she's not welcome back at Fox News. And she's still trying to get paid out on the rest of her $69 million contract. Although, come on, Megan. Nice. What are they, the Mets front office?
Nope. The first part of that, loser, really sounded like an episode of Mad Men I watched once upon a time. Well, speaking about things that are uneasy and make you uncomfortable, you know what time it is? It's game time. All right. First, before I get into it, I just want to say thank you to everybody who emailed me about games after our call to action last week. Got a whole bunch, some games, some questions about possible games. Very excited about the stuff that's coming in the next few weeks. So big thanks to our listeners there. Thank you very much. So, On to business. This is the seventh game time of the season. The season scores currently are Tara 4, looking to clinch it today. Buncey 1, Value Guess 1. Today we are playing First Impressions from Kevin C., who earns himself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra Hot Great Mini or Day Forcening of his choosing. In First Impressions, you must name the character for their first line from a show. I'll read the line, and for 2 points, you name the character. If you need a hint, I'll give you the show name, and you can answer for 1 point. All right. When I need to redact something, you'll hear this sound. All right. So here's an example. My name is... I live at 308 Negro Arroyo Lane, Albuquerque, New Mexico. To all law enforcement entities, this is not an admission of guilt. So the character would be... Walter White, correct. And if you needed a hint, I, of course, would have told you Breaking Bad. And that's how this game works. The first chunk of the game, most of the game is pilot episodes. So they are characters that have the first line in pilot episodes towards the end of the game. That may change, but we'll see as we go along. Tara Ariano, can I please get the steel meal situation?
Yes, can. And it is the following. Sarah D. Bunting has 10.
Wow.
Let's start catching those in, buddy. And the valued guest has 3.
All right.
0.
Okay, very good. Let's sort of picky to see who is going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. So Eve's going to go first, and then we're going to go Sarah, then Tara. Are we ready to play First Impressions?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
All right. So remind you, I'll give you the quote. You need to name the character. Here we go. Eve.
Right.
First line from this character. Can I ask you a question? Why do you smoke old golds?
That's the whole thing.
And I'm going to let you guess on the 2 point without jeopardizing the 1 point guess.
So. I was going to ask that.
Okay, cool. God, I don't even have a guess. May I just get a hint, please?
All right. Your show, Mad Men.
Don Draper.
Don Draper, 1 point. Sarah Bunting. Hello, I'm proud to announce that we've been able to increase safety here at the power plant without increasing the cost to the consumer or affecting management pay raises. However, for you semi-skilled workers, there will be no Christmas bonuses. Oh, and one more thing, Merry Christmas.
Mr. Burns?
2 points. Tara. Hey, so you know how I've always had a thing for half-Asian girls? Well, now I've got a new favorite. Lebanese girls. Lebanese girls are the new half-Asians.
Oh, boy. That sounds very familiar. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia? Shit.
How I Met Your Mother is the show.
Oh, Barney. Barney Stinson.
Correct. All right, back to Eve. Hi. I'm a nurse, and frankly, I don't really care for politics.
Claire?
All right, the show Parks and Rec. First line by this character. Hi. I'm redacted. I'm a nurse, and frankly, I don't really care for politics.
The person that Rashida Jones played. I can't think of her name. Come on, Sarah, steal meal me.
I never watched that show.
She doesn't know either. That is Anne. Yeah. Anne Perkins.
Oh, I would have guessed Anne.
All right, let's see if Sarah can get this one. Don't get me wrong. I'm not kidding myself. Anchorage isn't New York City, but it's not Cambodia, right? You know how many Chinese restaurants are in Anchorage? 5. There's 14 movie theaters, 2 practically kosher delis, and if we're talking about freezing, the temperature's only 5 degrees lower than Indiana, despite the differential in precipitation.
Joel Fleischman?
Right. 2 points.
Wow.
Nice.
Tara. Natalie. If you shout into a microphone while I'm wearing an earpiece, it poses the question, is there a decibel level at which the human head will, you know, explode?
Oh, no. What was his name? Jeremy? Shit.
Show Sports Night.
Casey? Dan? Oh, shit. Sorry. I stole someone's steal me. accidentally. Someone should steal meal that if that is correct, but
no,
I don't know.
I'm saying it, Danny.
Okay.
All right. To Eve. I am the Lord your God. Thou shalt worship no other God before me. Boy, those were the days, huh?
God?
The show, West Wing.
President Bartlett.
Correct. All right, back to Sarah. First line. Okay, I'm late. My kid is throwing up all over the place. You don't buy that excuse, I'm quitting, because I don't work for a man who has no compassion for my children. And it doesn't look like you're exactly swamped here. I'm usually very punctual. You don't like it? That's fine, because this ain't such a great job to begin with. I'm gonna change.
Oof. Roseanne Connor?
The show Cheers.
Carla.
Correct. Tara.
Yes.
I asked you to not use the word zombie. It's disrespectful. Stumbling around, squawking for brains. That's not how they do. And undead? No one wants to be un-anything. Why begin a statement with a negative? It's like saying, I don't disagree. Just say you agree.
I don't think this is right, but Liv Moore? Shit.
The show, Pushing Daisies.
Oh.
The character.
The pie guy, whose name was not Lee Pace. That's who played him, but I don't know. I don't remember.
You're very close. Either we accepted Ned or the pie maker.
Dang.
Yeah. All right, Eve. By the time we're ready to start building, we'll have that land. What they don't know won't hurt them. I have solid information that the Packard sawmill will go belly up within a year. We will buy it for a song, one verse, no chorus. Let's go get these cheese eaters where they live.
Jeez. What show?
The show Twin Peaks. The character who said that.
The thing is, I knew it was going to be Twin Peaks, but I have no idea who would have said it. I pass.
Steel Meal?
Yeah.
I'll try it. Leland Palmer?
That's Ben Horn. Ben Horn said that. Sarah D. Bunting, here's your actual question. You can pick up 2 points here. Our status is that we need some Goram air support. Now get back online and tell them to get in here.
Hint.
Firefly.
Oh, Goram.
Or Goram was a big hint there.
Space. Captain Mal.
I'll give it to you. Mal Reynolds is the answer. Tara Ariano. When startled to consciousness, the human mind takes a few minutes to orient, especially in strange surroundings. First line from what character?
Bernard?
That's a good guess. The show Quantum Leap.
Oh.
I'm going to give you 50-50 odds on this one.
I know. Well, I don't remember Dean Stockwell guy's name, so I'm going to say Sam Beckett.
You are correct. And that brings us into our first score break.
Well, I would like to say it's a close game, but it's not really. Eve and I are tied with 2 points each. Sarah has 6.
All right, wow. So that means you two are in the Gross Worth Equalizer Challenge Zone together. Very exciting times. Eve and Tara get to work together to split a possible total of 4 points between them.
Yep.
Here we go, starting with classics. What food... Wow, you know, even with glasses, this is tough to read. What food company's television theater prompted huge cheese sales when it debuted in 1947?
I'm going to guess this is probably Kraft. Eve?
Yeah, I was going to suggest that as well.
That's 1 point.
Hey.
Need 2 more to get your to collect. Sitcom, what color is Marge Simpson's hair?
Blue?
I concur.
Yes. Drama. What sci-fi show featured the salt vampire that polished off its victims by sucking the salt out of them? What sci-fi show featured the salt vampire?
I'm going to guess we're far enough into the 90s for this box that this is probably X-Files.
That was my gut, too, but I don't know.
I don't think it's something like Outer Limits or anything
like that.
Yeah,
it would be like Kolchak or anything at this stage of the game, I don't think. Yeah.
Okay, X-Files.
X-Files? Shit.
Star Trek, guys.
Turns
into that hexagon-y looking cube. Well, not cube, but whatever you call it. Cube, that's a hexagon. Okay. Here we go. Kids and games. Who was the captain of the Video Rangers?
Captain Kangaroo, probably. Right?
What other captains are there that
I don't know.
Deal with kids?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Captain Video, you dummies.
Fine.
Stars. The answer will be a celebrity. What show's stars, unhappy with their share of the take, were briefly replaced by Byron Cherry and Christopher Mayer?
I know this one. It's the Dukes of Hazzard.
Yep. Yeah, you do.
It is the Dukes of Hazzard, and that is three. So add two to your totals, Eve and Tara.
So all right.
Back to the game.
Still in the lead. Good job, Eve.
Question
Good
13
job, Tara.
Of 33. Here we go. For Eve. Cold enough for you, Chief?
Oh, God.
Keep in
Show,
mind,
please?
I'm not doing accents. I'm not doing, you know,
Right.
Cold enough for you, Chief.
God. Oh. Can you just tell me the show, please?
Fargo.
God damn it. I knew it was Fargo, but that does not help me. Because I can't remember anybody's name. I don't know. I'm sorry.
That is Molly Salverson from Fargo. Yeah. Sarah D. Bunting. It's true what they say about Northern girls.
Well, this is obviously Governor Gatling from Benson.
The show Game of Thrones.
Jesus. God. It's true what they say about Northern girls.
Yes. Like Who would say that on Game of Thrones? Their first line. It's not the dragon.
No. Not, what's his name? Or the other guy.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I drink and I know things.
Tara Ariano. Yeah. Ed, I just heard you gave Catherine the Al Gore interview, and I had some thoughts on that I'd like to share with you.
This is Bill McNeil of News Radio.
Correct. 2 points.
Nice.
Eve, I'm only half Arabic, actually. My dad is Palestinian. He's a U.S. citizen, and he's not a threat to national security or anything. A lot of people want to know that after they meet him because he has a lot of angry energy. Not angry at America, just angry at my mom for leaving, although she did leave because he was angry. And he was angry because she's American. My name is, by the way.
A show, please.
Community.
Abed?
That's good for a point. That brings us to question 17.
Spread Eagle.
Or Sarah. It's a surprise for him. I'm going to walk in and just drop my coat to the ground. What do you think?
Hint.
New Girl. First line of what character from New Girl?
Jess? I just couldn't think of her name.
Yeah.
All right, for Tara. This is my school. If you go here, your parents are either millionaires or parents work for millionaires. A town without a middle class. If you're in the second group, you get a job. Fast food, movie theaters, mini marts. Or you could be me. My after-school job means tailing philandering spouses or investigating false injury claims.
Well, my first thought was that it was Gossip Girl, but I was close. That's Veronica Mars.
That's Veronica Mars, yes.
Good.
This is question 19. They said it, this is for Eve. They said it was a panic attack because the blood work and neurological work came back negative, and they sent me here.
Show?
The Sopranos.
Tony Soprano.
Yeah, Tony Soprano. Sarah D. Bunting. No notes, no prior sign. Each of them in a strange location that means nothing to them where they've never gone before. That's not how I kill myself.
Anna from 13 Reasons Why? I don't know. Hint?
Your show is Sherlock. Hello?
Yes, I'm here. I'm just trying to choose which character. So I am going to say Watson. No.
Okay. It's the other one. Tara Ariano. I just feel like someone reached down my throat, grabbed my small intestine, pulled it out of my mouth, and tied it around my neck.
Wow.
Elliot Reed.
The show Friends, Tara. Friends, for shame.
Chandler?
Ooh, Ross Geller said that. That was his first line.
Guys, don't forget about your steel meals, by the way.
Eve Beatty. Mm-hmm. Yes, doctor. On line four, we have Russell from Kirkland. Dr. Blank. On line
Ross.
Four. Russell from Kirkland. Roz is correct from Frasier.
Nice.
Well done. 2 points. Sarah D. Bunting. I know what you're thinking, but don't worry. I don't bite.
Angel
from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. 2 points.
Wow.
Correct. All right. Take us into our second score break, Tara Ariano. I'm great. Thanks for asking. Oh, one question. Where am I? Who are you? And what's going on?
Is this Fry? Philip J. Fry? Dang.
The show The Good Place.
Eleanor Shellstrop.
Eleanor Shellstrop is good for 1 point. Let's hear the scores here.
Well, now it is a very close game. Sarah and I are tied with 9 points each. Eve has 8.
All right, that means Eve.
Solo equalizer.
Solo. Oh, God.
Are you ready, Eve?
Good luck,
equalizer. Good luck.
Here we go. Classics. What show's opening promised? We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. Mentioned on this show already.
The Outer Limits.
The Outer Limits. Sitcoms. What sitcom, a private, wound up at Fort Bradley outside Biloxi, Mississippi?
What sitcom? Did you say private?
What sitcom, private, wound up at Fort Bradley outside of Biloxi? Private.
Benjamin.
Yeah. God, I love that show for some reason.
Drama. What series made TV Guide rave? At long last, television has a bald detective.
Kojak?
All right, those are 3. If you can get the next 3, we double your take. Kids and Games. What cereal conglomerate sponsored Rocky and his friends?
Kellogg?
General Foods.
Shit.
But you still have 2 points, so that brings the scores to...
No, she has 4 points.
Yeah.
Yes, sorry, 4 points. My bad.
Okay, well,
all right.
Now Sarah and I are still tied with 9 points each, and Eve has 12.
All right, Eve pulls ahead, and that's the magic of the Gross Earth Equalizer Challenge Zone. We are back. Everybody has one more questions before the nature of the questions changes a little bit. Let's start with Eve.
Okay.
We going undefeated, shattering records, taking these high expectations to unimaginable new highs. State champions.
Show?
Friday Night Lights.
See, why am I even asking? I knew it was Friday Night Lights, but I don't know any of those people. I don't know. Sorry.
That's Brian Smash Williams.
That's a name.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I didn't spend a steel meal since I would have gotten that wrong. Yes.
Who gives a toast at her own wedding? I mean, who does that? Who stands in the middle of a ballroom after drinking 3 glasses of champagne on a completely empty stomach? And I mean completely empty, because fitting into this dress required no solid food for 3 straight weeks. Who does that? I do.
Benson?
The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Maisel.
Maisel.
Mrs. Maisel?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose you're correct.
You don't Maisel have to Tom. Give it to me.
Midge. Midge is the name, but, you know.
Thank you.
Tara. There are two kinds of pain. The sort of pain that makes you strong, or useless pain, and the sort of pain that's only suffering. I have no patience for useless things. Moments like this require someone who will act, who will do the unpleasant thing, the necessary thing.
Ooh. Hannibal Lecter?
That's a good guess. The show House of Cards.
Oh. The other creep, Frances Underwood.
That is correct.
I thought it was going to be House.
All right, everybody has two questions left. We're basically playing the same game, except these are now characters that were introduced later in the series, but it's still their first line. So these are not from the pilot episodes. All right, so that's a little bit of a context for you. So we're going to start with Eve. Mm-hmm. Home, sweet home.
That's, that's mean.
What show?
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Spike.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting. Tertiary adjunct of Unimatrix 01. But you may call me. You are proposing a large-scale weapon. We concur.
Show, please.
Star Trek Voyager.
Q. I don't know.
That's 7 of 9. 7 of 9.
Oh.
Tara Ariano.
Mm-hmm.
Cocoon 2, The Return. I guess they didn't like it up there. All right. I'm calling this one.
Okay.
The show is Seinfeld. Cocoon to the Return.
Elaine
at the video store in the second episode. Correct. Yes. All right. Everybody's last question coming up quickly. Scores.
Oh boy. Okay. Sarah has 10. I have 11. Eve has 13.
Okay. This is a very important question for everybody. And here's Eve's. This is amazing. Hundreds of bottles. Red and white wine glasses, high-grade Naga-hide stool covers, a brass rail, and a big city bartender with a joke at the ready.
Show, please.
Cheers.
Sam Malone?
Oh, he's done. That's Woody Boyd.
Oh.
Woody Boyd.
Oh.
All right.
It's not who I would have guessed.
Sarah Bunting, as soon as I heard Ben had resigned... Your reputation precedes you.
Hint.
A little show called Law and Order.
Ben. Huh. Okay. Jack McCoy?
Yes.
Luis.
All right. Last question of the game. Tara. Hi. I'm... Did you know you have rights? The Constitution says you do, and so do I.
It's all good, man.
It's all good, man. Oh. Breaking Bad. Final scores.
Ooh.
Well, we have a tie, Dave.
Okay.
Eve and I are tied with 13 lucky points each.
13 points each. We have a tiebreaker. Here's how it's going to work. I am going to read one more question. This is a character from the pilot. First line from the pilot. As soon as you know it, you can shout it out. All right?
Yep.
You don't have to wait for me to finish it. Understood? Ready, Tara?
Yes.
Ready, Eve?
Yep.
Here we go. 8 ounces of gold at $20 an ounce is a 160 plus 10 for a half ounce is a 170 total.
Al Swearengen?
Al Swearengen is the correct answer.
Nice.
And that means...
Tara!
Tara.
History repeats itself. Try and you succeed.
Best around. Singing while stuffed up and sick.
You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around.
Congratulations, Tara. Well done.
Tara. Clinched good it job,
at
Tara.
The end. Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We doubled down on toil and trouble with looks at the new witch remakes Charmed and the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina before going around the dial with stops at The Haunting of Hill House, Iron Fist, and Counterpart. Caroline was the master of the canon domain with her pitch for Seinfeld's The Contest, which she brought to successful completion. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time and the season. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariana,
I get my coffee on the outside.
Sarah D. Bunting.
One big Nudorama.
And Eve Beatty.
Do you guys know where I can get one of those roach clips like she had? Because I might take up smoking if I can find one.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
I'm out.